You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and that buzzing that you hear is Chris McFeely. He has gone low-tech for the next couple of weeks, but that's okay. It's due to some technical difficulties on his end, but he is here, even though he's
Hello?
Broadcasting from the dark side of the moon.
Yes, that buzzing is coming from upstairs. Call the police.
Yes. But he will be imagely depicted by the upgraded version of the Esse Homo, which, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google search that, because, wow, that's something that invaded your social media this week. In a nutshell, there's this fresco that was in a church in Spain,
I
guess.
Oh, yes, okay, yeah.
And woman tried to fix it and made it awesomely horrible.
I didn't know what the hell you were talking about until you just explained it.
It's currently Matt Fraction's Twitter.
You call me.
It's Matt Fraction's Twitter avatar at the moment. So
no.
That's where I first saw it. Is he
avatar of your nightmares? Yeah.
So great! It is so great. I love it.
I love it that the lady who fixed the painting thinks there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, she actually turned herself in, though.
She must be very, 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 very nearsighted.
She's 80, too, so, you know. But anyway, poor lady. She tried to make it better, but failed miserably.
Thought that kind.
So, it is Fanboy versus the Rob Liefeld implosion. As we will
stop making it out to be such a big thing, man.
I think it's fun. I want to. I
Rob
think it's.
Rob Liefeld is nearly said a really bad word there. Probably shouldn't go that blue that early. Rob Liefeld is dick news at 11. Like really.
Yeah, I mean that's not the surprising part. No. So, but I mean, we're obviously we'll talk about this as the first part of the news. So this would be our segue into the news.
Well, yeah.
But so let me pose this question to you all. You know, let's say that you're a comic book creator, writer, and artist, and you're not necessarily at the prime of your career, but it's certainly not over. And you're having problems.
Believe yourself to still be the best thing since sliced bread.
True. Now, you're having problems with editorial. So do you, A, suck it up and deal because, hey, you've got a paid job. B, quietly resign and move on to other deals because it's just not working out for you creatively. Or do you see, throw up your hands, post angry posts to Twitter, attack other editors, creators, writers, artists, and generally just sort of explode? If you're Rob Liefeld, you do see. That's basically what sort of has happened this week, I guess. Do you want to fill us in on maybe some of the details, Chris?
Well, Rob Liefeld, as you may recall, if you are somewhere in your mid-20s and still think that young blood is the greatest thing ever.
Oh, my God.
Was one of
you cannot tell me that it's not, because it is, and you're wrong.
Rob Liefeld. Image founder Rob Liefeld, a notorious, terrible artist and punching bag of the industry who just blithely just sort of grins his way through it all in a real haters gonna hate sort of a style with his stupid fucking baseball cap and all his photos. just sort of announced on Twitter. Announced on Twitter. That was how he chose to inform the world and DC at large that he was finished with his various books at DC after he was forced to make many not any one change, I don't think, has been the tipping point or anything. It's just that he is not the first creator to claim that DC is having some a lack of editorial what's the word?
Cohesion? Cohesion? Yeah, I mean, Yeah. And I want to, I want to interject and preface right here that I totally get why Rob Liefeld left. And I totally believe the stuff that he said. You know,
I would believe it too, yeah.
It's not, and that's why I oppose, like, your 3-point, you know, possibilities here, because I get it. It's a shit situation. You know, DC's in the middle of trying to do this New 52 thing. Now they're right on the heels of Marvel trying to do their relaunch. They're trying to retain some kind of, you know, leadership in the market. They really are kind of making it up as they go along. So I get Rob's frustration. I don't question that. It's the response.
I don't even question the response either. It's like I got there was this strange smell just wafted across my nostrils yesterday, and I realized after just pausing to savor it for a moment that it was the scent of burning bridges.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, that's it.
I don't know. It's like, I don't even know what.
I don't see a problem with it.
I don't care. Rob Liefeld hasn't been relevant in 10 years or more. And it's baffling that DC insists we're just throwing books at him. Oh, what's that? Rob, Hawk, and Dove crashed and burned on its arse? Well, obviously what you need are 3 books instead of 1. Clearly allowing you to focus on one thing. We needed to split that focus and spread it out so you wouldn't put all your shit into one book. Spread it out so that it maybe just... We have to keep 52 on the stand somehow. I don't give a fuck that Rob Liefeld went crazy on Twitter or that he's leaving DC. Holy shit, maybe 3 less terrible books. Will he put out. Go back to Extreme and continue pumping out things 6 months late, Rob. Maybe I'll care whenever you die!
I so wish you could see your face right now, McFeely. Yeah.
But, yeah, and that's exactly, I mean, it's like, you know, good riddance. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out, you know.
Don't let the door hit you. I have nothing else to say.
We mentioned this before the show, but it's like, if you have no concept of what Rob Liefeld does artistically, Rob Liefeld does to people what Pat Lee does to Transformers.
Rob Liefeld is still probably worse than Pat Lee.
Sure, but in terms of comparison, like, you know how Pat Lee, like, makes robots way bigger than they need to be and then adds a bunch of cracks and lines and stuff that doesn't need to be there? That's what he does to people, basically.
With pouches.
Yes, replace cracks with pouches, replace just bulk with insane muscles that don't even exist.
Giant thighs that should not exist in this
universe. Non-existent lips.
It's just that Pat Lee could normally remember what hand someone was holding something in from panel to panel.
Well, that's...
Which of Cable's eyes was supposed to be glowing.
And he also did... Pat Lee did a better job, I think, of he actually stole people's money and their art. I don't know that Rob actually stole.
He did a better job of running a company into the ground as well.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, jeez.
You know.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, Rob Liefeld.
No.
Like, oh, he said some silly. I mean.
Well, he's still attacking people, too. He attacked Scott Snyder last night. He's just attacking random people at this
point. Yeah, it's like he did slip off his meds or something, you know. It's like, Rob, really? Why are you burning all your bridges? It's like Marvel won't have you back.
Oh, no. The first day he called Tom Brevoort a fat idiot. I mean.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
All right, well, I guess you're not going to Marvel then.
Definition of someone who believes their own hype, but it's hype 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, who is
I don't know what you're talking about with hype, man. I mean, this guy was in a Levi's commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't touch bigger than that.
I mean, he was awesome. Yeah.
I hear they're planning a crossover.
He was drawing his comics in that Levi's commercial.
He was on the Dennis Miller show. I mean, come on, you know. God, I mean, Lost in the 90s will be the title of his biography, you know, because that's basically where this man lives. So, anyway, Rob Liefeld.
Without him, you would not have your character that you love so much, Deadpool. So you got to give him some credit.
I mean, I like Deadpool for sure, but the stuff that Rob Liefeld, I mean, did, you know, things have happened since then. We'll just go with that, you know.
Okay.
You know. Yeah.
Well, perhaps this could maybe be the last we'll hear of him.
Oh,
I can't see DC not back.
Well, it's certainly the last you'll hear of here, unless something really insane happens. I mean, this will be our capstone on the story. But I'm sure it will go on, so if you would enjoy some more entertainment, feel free to follow him on Twitter, because, man, now he's on vacation the rest of this week, I guess, but we'll see. You know.
Yeah, funny enough, that maybe a permanent vacation.
I love how you said,
with no fixed end.
How do you take a vacation when you're unemployed?
Yeah.
How that works.
Don't worry, he's got comics from the first scheduled to come out 8 months ago to finish off yet.
Sure. Yeah, and apparently, I was reading up on it a little bit, and it was like, apparently he has an easier time doing his freelance stuff than he does doing his, like, own work. Like, his creator-owned stuff, it's like, comes out incredibly late as opposed to, like, freelance stuff, but I don't know. Whatever. Rob Liefeld. There you go.
Go back and
read that Twitter feed. Hilarious.
Can't wait for the next issue of Youngblood 6 months from now.
Oh yeah. All right, what else we got?
Okay, well, there's a couple of things. It's been announced rather suddenly that Ed Brubaker is to leave Winter Soldier.
Oh?
And not just Winter Soldier.
I mean, that'll be it for Marvel, yeah. There'll be nothing left.
Yeah.
He'll not be doing anything else at Marvel. Not like out of a bad will or anything. It's just
not in a Rob Liefeld sort of way. But
no, it's just it seems to be a timing thing where Marvel told him. There we go. I heard this. I'm not sure if it's accurate, but that Marvel told him numbers were too low and they were going to end it. Then they changed their mind. But in the interim, he'd already taken on more work.
Ah,
sort of thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, someone else is taking it over. It's not ending. Judd Winnick has also confirmed he's leaving Batwing.
And DC, isn't he? I think I heard that as well.
I don't know if I heard DC, I just heard Batwing.
Yeah, I heard Batwing, but I didn't hear DC yet.
No, I think I read it on Bleeding Cool, I thought that story indicated he was leaving DC completely, so.
Well, and he's already left Catwoman.
Right. I think I think that may be his last title there, so.
Maybe.
I don't know. Who knows? I just found out that Dan Jurgens is taking over Firestorm
three head writers in a span of 1 year. That's what you need.
Yeah, but you know what sucker's going to be reading it? Yeah, buddy, that's going to be me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, I'm glad I got off that.
You should be reading the regular Superman book because Dan Jurgens is writing that and drawing that.
No, he's leaving that though because I think his only book is going to be.
Is he leaving it? Okay, yeah. All right. Well, he was doing it the last issue I read of it.
It's been announced that Geoff Johns and David Finch are going to team up and bring us Justice League of America, a new series next year.
What?
Ooh, so that'll probably be teaming off the Earth 2 then.
Well, I don't know. It's the promotional image, which is loading in front of me right now, shows Martian Manhunter, Catwoman, Green Arrow. Is that Katana? Is that? I don't know who that is. Is that Vibe?
Oh, so it's going to be like a B-team Justice League.
Yeah. Hawkman, Stargirl. Nice to see Stargirl. Maybe that's Steve Trevor or...
Well, that's not surprising.
New Green Lantern.
I mean, it's Geoff Johns. Of course he's going to put Stargirl in there. I mean,
indeed. Yep. It's physically possible for Catwoman to have her zipper any lower in that picture.
God.
It's possible. It's possible.
It would just be naked. You would have areola, and that's just, you know.
It would just be on the floor, but it's still possible.
His Vibe, yes. I'm guessing that is probably going to factor into the Trinity War somehow, given the way we've seen some of those members in fighting the main Justice League in that promotional thing for Trinity in the free comic book day issue.
I swear, it sounds like you're flying a biplane, Chris McFeely. I'm so sorry. It's awesome. It's like broadcasting from a biplane flying over South America.
Goodness gracious. Just coming over the wire now.
This is going to be the best show ever. All right.
Okay, yeah, I just read this. The comic... What convention is on right now? Fan Expo.
Fan Expo, yes.
Right now. Yeah. Yes. And I said, the one that just made me laugh, which I just read before the show started there. Let me just get the creators. Yes. J. Michael Straczynski and Eduardo Risso had a two-issue addendum to Before Watchmen with the new two-issue series. This show's favorite, Before Watchmen, Moloch.
Yeah, how, I mean, it's as though they listen to us in reverse.
It's as though
we said that there was already way too much Moloch.
Here is more Moloch.
Oh, what they're saying? They need more Moloch. More Moloch. Put a two issue out.
Write it out over three.
Who's so far the worst writer of all of the Before Watchmen? JMS. Put him on it.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Was Moloch even in Dr. Manhattan? I didn't pay attention. I didn't have my Moloch watch on.
Yes. I thought he was.
I didn't read it that closely, but I figure like he's actually bound up in Manhattan's story in the film, unlike all the other bastard characters whose books he appears in.
I think he's in a panel of this somewhere.
That's enough.
I recall.
That's all it counts.
Moloch was everybody's arch enemy ever. Because he was like the one named supervillain in Watchmen. It's like, you know, it's like generally speaking, Before Watchmen has approached things with the correct head on its shoulders, barring a couple of instances. But this weird decision to just take the only named supervillain out of the original book and act like he was the worst dude ever and everybody's archenemy, it's almost fan fiction-y, you know?
It is. Yeah, it is. It's wow. It's like, who is at the helm here? Like, which editors were like, you know,
who's got the Moloch boner?
Yeah. God, Moloch was so great. And he did not, and he didn't even do anything in,
so
I mean,
he did, he died.
Other than, yes, that's what he did in the original Watchmen. That was really what he was good for.
You know, no, he. What was great was that Rorschach jumped out from his refrigerator to scare yeah. him. That's the only good thing he did, actually.
God.
If this could be the story of what his solar mirror was for, I could get behind that.
Yeah, but no, I didn't see Moloch, actually, now that I'm going back through Dr. Manhattan, so that may be safe, but God.
Yeah, so that's the thing that's happening as well.
Yeah.
And I'm just scanning to see if anything has just broken recently. But nothing has leapt out at me.
Hey,
what? Wait a second.
Superman and Wonder Woman are, you know, they're getting together, apparently. Says DC.
Oh, yeah, well, that's another thing that's happening. God, that is
wait. Short. Did you hear my eyes rolling to the back of my head? Oh, my God. Really?
I mean, we've known that's coming for a while now.
DC is trying way too hard. Come on. No.
What is there to say about that, you know? It's like, that's not sustainable. That's not sensible. That is the sort of idea that people who don't... rosy-eyed, Silver Age nostalgists who... don't read comics, but just sort of think that Girl Superman and Man Superman should be together and have super babies.
Yeah.
And it's like, even Alex Ross has that, you know, and like they hook up in Kingdom Come. And...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, I mean,
that only needs to happen in Kingdom Come and like never again, apparently.
I mean, and, you know, I mean,
a lot of Elseworlds do it.
It's like they watch Mallrats or something. I don't know. It's just, it's, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's dumb. To be honest, I would like to say it's probably not a fixed thing now.
No.
Because really, it's not like, I mean, I'm still not properly comprehending what DC's thought process was whenever they said, remember how everybody reacted so wonderfully to whenever we magically retconned away, well, not we, but whenever Marvel magically retconned away one of its major marriages?
Yeah.
We need us some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
one can only assume that they plan at some point to actually do the Superman and Lois romance up from the ground again.
It's
that's what I was getting from reading the Superman comic, and then it just kind of dropped off the face of the earth, and I was like, what?
I mean, but Superman and Lois is Superman's lobster. She can't.
Yes.
It's like they can't. You know. They may be separated for a little while, but eventually it'll work out. It might take 10 seasons, and you know. Eventually,
seasons, and then they almost get married, but instead Darkseid attacks, and then they go for 5 years more, and they're still not married, and they write the newspaper. And anyway, right. No, that was a television show.
And then when they, yeah.
Dang.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only assume that's not going to be a fixed thing.
No,
I'd like to think
that
it's not.
Anyway. That will be not long, I don't think.
Here's something more interesting, and actually probably slightly less believable, that has just been announced. which is that Joe Keating, who's the writer of Hell Yeah and Glory over at Image, and Richard Elson, who we know and love on this show from Journey into Mystery, are going to be doing a Morbius the Living Vampire ongoing series.
Ooh. Oh my god.
No, that is no, ooh, ooh. No, I think the noise you were looking for is,
Oh, wait, I mean.
Okay, so are they going off the continuity in Spider-Man, or...
Yeah, it seems to be picking up after the end of where he is left at the end.
Where he's in jail?
Presumably he'll get out. Maybe on good behavior.
Okay.
I like Morbius.
You know, I can't say I'm going to pick that one up.
That's a weird
That's
choice.
Just so weird. Well, didn't I say last week that we were going to start hearing about the weirder new number one?
You think about it. Vampires are huge right now.
That's
they should be. I know. I mean,
are they going to Twilightify him? Is that the direction?
We got to get him sparkly.
Be some romance in there. I bet you. Yeah, he'll get some golf chick who likes vampires or something.
He's
going to
be like all sparkly, talking about his plasma.
My plasma. I hunger for plasma. Yeah.
Cool.
Right. Well, that's the last thing I see.
Okay. Well, there you go. All right, then.
So, a lot of weird stuff. People leaving stuff. Weird stuff happening. And yeah, we're in a weird period.
Yeah, it's been an odd week.
It's been an odd week, yeah. We've had all the obvious Marvel Now announcements, so we get the weirder ones starting to creep in now. DC seems to be in a quiet state of steady self-destruction as creators leave.
Does the Zero start next week? Is it next week the Zero start?
Week after.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it's the new month. That's
right. Yeah, new month. Yep. So, yay for Zeros.
Yeah. Well.
All right.
Here you go.
So... I guess we'll get on then to recommendations.
Recommendations.
You're trying to class it up, but it's not working.
Recommendations are perfect for my podcast.
I guarantee. All right. Chris Triplett, what do you have to tell us about this week?
I am recommending Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 13 this week, which it's a book
it's
that.
Recommending it. It's not
wow.
Me.
Yeah.
So
good deal.
Somebody is recommending it, so doesn't that count?
Hey, we're in a bizarro world where Chris Triplett is not talking about Spider-Man. He is talking about Turtles, and Nicole is not.
I'm talking about Spider-Man because it's at the top of the show.
Well, but
you know
that's
that,
not
right?
Like your pick, you know what I mean? That's not like what you're exclusively talking about, so, yeah.
I was, like, it's running fair. Low on stuff this week. I mean, it was just not looking good. It's like, it was going to be either Dr. Manhattan, which I really didn't want to talk about, or it was going to be Transformers, which all I was going to say is, hey, it's still awesome. And by the way, I would buy a book of the loser Decepticons in a heartbeat. If you're listening,
where's my mini series for that? You know,
I'm not talking about a mini series. We got the Lost Light. I want the loser light. You know, with their own ship going in another direction.
Wow.
And like the ships may cross at some point, and they'll be like, "Boy, look at those losers on that ship." And that ship on the other ship's gonna be like, "Boy, look at those losers as they're going by on the other ship."
Wow.
That's how
ship
it.
Their ship is called the Weak Anthropic Principle, so that would just be the title of the series.
God.
My God. I mean, if a fourth Transformers book was to be published, that is what needs to be published. I mean, yeah, that's. I'll leave it at that. I mean, because, yeah, book was awesome. But, yeah, Turtles is what I'm recommending this week because it continues to be a good book, and it's really cool. I mean, it's a Turtles comic that I feel I'm okay to say, hey, this is good. Because, like, in the past, we've gotten some crappy Turtles comics. That Image comic, I didn't read that Image comic, but I've heard some shit that came out of it, and it sounded awful. But this book, it's got a good start with it. I mean, I didn't know how I would like the stuff with the reincarnation, but I really like it. I think that's a cool direction to go with it. You know, I mean, if you're going to have ninjas in modern day, I mean, it makes sense to kind of throw in some mystical stuff and say, oh, yeah, they're all just reincarnated, and just happens that some of them are turtles and a rat. Okay, all right, I'll work with it. And, you know, this is just, you know, just kind of continuing the stuff with Shredder, which I had to get caught up on it because I was behind by like 6 issues or something. So it was kind of cool when I got to the issue.
Oh, so you got to read a bunch of
them. Yeah, I got to read a bunch of them, like in a row. And I was like, when's Shredder going to show up? When's Shredder going to show up? When's Shredder going to show up? Here he is. Okay. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
And it's showing the SmackDown. Well, like at this issue, he pretty much takes the smack out on his own granddaughter. It's just like, you're good. You're no good.
What's her name? Karai? Is that her name?
Karai? Kari? Or I don't know how to say Japanese names. K-A-R-A-I.
I think
Karai.
It's Karai.
Karai.
And,
yeah. Am I crazy in thinking, was she not in the, like, the 2000 series also? The cartoon?
The Anybody TMNT? See?
That 2000-ish animated series that came out, like 2003 or something. Can't remember.
I can't remember it. Yeah.
I think she was. I think they're, like, taking stuff from, like, all over the place, which is cool. It's like they're taking, you know, a comic version of Baxter Stockman, throwing him in there. They're taking sort of, like, the animated series, the different colored headbands, and throwing it in there. And then I guess they're taking her from maybe the 2000 or so series and throwing that in there. And then they're doing something new with it, the whole reincarnation thing. And it works. I like it. And hell, even you know, Crane in it is really cool. I mean, he's sort of like a 90s-looking supervillain. But other than that, you know, it's pretty awesome. He's got a brain in his chest. I mean, how can you complain about that? But the end of the issue is what's like really awesome. I'm not going to spoil it, but it involves the dangling plotline with Casey Jones' dad. Because Casey's like young, you know, he's kind of like, you know, a kid in this. And his dad's been pretty abusive. And when he basically gets beat up pretty bad one night, Raphael, who is his best friend in the comic, decides he ain't going to take this no more. And you think the story's going to go one way, but no, it goes a totally different way, like you were talking about, that last page. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah, and Sprite is telling us that Karai was in the original comic series.
Was she?
Oh, she was. Yeah, she was. Yeah, she's Shredder's adopted daughter.
Well, in this story, she's his granddaughter.
Yeah, she's his granddaughter. And they make allusions that she resurrected him somehow, like, but they don't go into details about it. So that's going to be.
Yeah, well, there's all this resurrection. I mean, I'm still not read up on it yet. So I mean, I was surprised when I heard about that whole resurrected thing with Yoshi and Splinter, and I was like, "What?" When I heard about it, yeah. I need to get all the details on it first.
See, like, when you hear about it, it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, but when you hear about
it
sounds
it, it's like
stupid.
Good.
Yeah, when you hear about it, it sounds like a stupid idea. But reading it, it like when you get to that issue where you get the origin story about him and his sons, it just clicks. And, like, how they started off and they all had the red headbands, and then they switched to the color ones, it made sense because, like, you know, they're hunting for Raph. That was cool. I mean, all these little things just kind of, you know, adds up, and it's a cool book. I like it. I'm surprised by it because I thought it was going to be, like, yet another IDW quick cash grab, but I guess maybe because Eastman's involved with it, it gives it a little bit more, you know, legitimacy, you know, in my mind at least. I don't know for other people, but it's not bad if you're a Turtles fan.
It's my favorite comic that I'm picking up. So,
I'm
of course,
so
I'll recommend it.
I'm so surprised I'm buying so many IDW comics. I kind of feel like I've been replaced by like an android or something because I would never
like you've been hypnotized maybe or like you, there's a spell or a chant on you.
IDW is they're licensed product, but they're taking they're doing a great job with them.
It seems like from the stuff I'm reading, I recommend it. Totally pick it up, try it out.
Awesome. Cool. Nicole.
All right. Well, if you guys were here a couple weeks ago, I reviewed something that was off the wall. It's the same one. I'm gonna recommend it again. Tales Designed to Thrizzle. It's by Michael Kupperman. He's the one that he's the writer. He's the artist. He writes it all. Yeah. So.
Oh, you know, I've only heard of this in passing, but I thought it was kind of an anthology thing with different creators on it. I didn't realize it was all one guy.
It's all him. So. And okay. It's just a bunch of like little stories, little advertisements that are just. This guy has to be messed up.
That's a page quote. This guy has got to be messed up. Family verses.
Go on the back of the paperback.
In this one, he talks about, this is number 7, he talks about scary bathtub stories and how bathtubs are designed by the devil and they're meant to kill you pretty much. So,
wow.
I can't believe that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on this. Yeah, I would like to subscribe to this guy's newsletter. I'm interested.
Yeah. And it says, well, if you think, you know, it's like, where was it at? It's just like, it's others to represent, what it says, it's a representation of subconsciousness, the desire of man to submerge himself in his own excrement. So I'm just like, that's just one of the things about this bathtub.
And I thought he meant like they were slippy and dangerous, so he's crazy.
No. The devil sells the bathtubs, and he has these monsters come out, and there's this one monster that has all these eyes in its mouth, and pretty much it goes for the guy's genitals, and his wife comes in, she's gone.
Wow.
That's just, and then they have an advertisement, like I said, they have an advertisement here for anyone that has a cat. You can unleash the power of your cat. Do you have a cat? Does it get angry? Then you could be a master of karate.
Karate?
Wow.
Yeah, that's just one of the advertisements. And then they
I think Roy Harper pioneered that a few years ago, didn't he? Over in Justice League.
Roy Harper
beat up a homeless guy with a dead cat when he was high on drugs? No.
No.
That really happened.
I'm trying to forget about that. Forget. Forget.
Lord.
Go away.
God.
Yeah, that happened. Just check it. Thought the joke was going a little overhead.
Wow.
And then we have a story here that's kind of Inception-like. There's a story within a story within a story, and you get kind of confused because this guy's a detective, but then he goes up to see St. Peter to help him with the crime, and then he actually meets up with Leonardo DiCaprio. And he talks about how he's in Inception. So that's one little story that got a little confusing. And then they also do Reservoir Dogs 2. And you remember in Reservoir Dogs, this is Reservoir Dogs 2 featuring Snake and Bacon, and it's actually a snake.
Snake and Bacon, I know. Yeah. Bacon.
Yeah, it's an actual snake and a piece of bacon. Actual piece of bacon. So, but you know how in Reservoir Dogs, they all assigned them colors? You know, Mr. Pink, Mr. Yell. Well, this one, they assigned them like different pieces of meat.
Oh my God.
Well, almost. It's like a mixture of because it's snake and bacon. Some of them have lizard names. Some of them have pork names. So it's Mr. Ham, Mr. Iguana, Mr. Hot Dog, Mr. Salamander, Mr. Prosciutto. I don't know what that is. Mr. Newt.
Prosciutto.
That's it. Yeah. Mr. Newt and Mr. Porkline instead of the colors. And they he actually has you know casted. If you've ever seen Reservoir Dogs, he has actually drawn them to look just like the cast. Oh, and of course, they argue about their names. And then you come to find out the guy that was up there talking to St. Peter, he comes into this story as well.
Wow. And then,
it's just a very interesting. And then my favorite has to be McGruff the Crime Dog, if you guys know who that is.
Yeah, I am.
And Mick Arf. here, and they make fun of him how he buries people that do crimes in the backyard with his bones. And find the yard pretty much.
Oh my god!
Because he's trying to find the alphabet soup's killer. So this guy kills someone, and he puts out messages with alphabet soup. And so he's to try to find him and bury him in the backyard. There's like 10 different stories in here and many advertisements, and it's just one crazy thing after another.
Good lord.
And yeah. And then they talk about Mark Twain's crazy brother, Larry Twain. Who was an author of a book of how to photograph chicks' butts. That's Larry Twain.
God. Oh my god. Oh.
So yeah, if you want something that's just totally bizarre, you want to laugh constantly, this is like one of the funniest things I've read. And yeah, I've read 2 issues and each one of them are just hilarious. So.
I don't think anything beat Columbo as a werewolf on the moon. I think that's pretty awesome.
Wow.
Oh. Buzz Aldrin being a cyborg.
God.
Oh, you guys gotta pick this up. I'm not kidding. I'm gonna have to go back and get the trades for the last one. Because it's too funny. Too funny.
Awesome.
I'd heard about this, but I didn't really know what it involved.
Yeah, it's wacky.
It's just stories he comes up with in his mind, and he puts it out on paper, and you're just like, some of them are just a couple pages long. Some of them are long, you know, a few pages long. But each one of them, each panel is just filled with, like the whole Reservoir Dogs thing. It's just, if you know that movie, it's just bit after bit of just funniness. And then they have, here's another one. They have the Hannibal. You know how Animal Man could turn into any animal that he wants? Well, this guy has...
Animal Man! I had to say it, I'm sorry.
This guy has a ham that he's carrying home, but it gets struck with superpowers, and it could become anything he wants, but it has the head of the ham. But it could be anything else.
What was it called again?
The Hannibal.
So wait, is it like Manimal, but with ham?
Yeah,
or?
He can turn into anything, but his head's still the size
of the ham. Not
limited
to animals.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, just say, it's just crazy, crazy stuff, and it's just like, wow. This Michael Kupperman is just insane, and I love him for it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So beat that.
Yeah. Okay. So in yet another of my series of please don't buy this. I'm going to mention yet another.
This defeats your recommendation. You're not supposed to be like, please don't
buy. I know.
You're supposed to be recommending.
I'm recommending that you not pay money for this.
Okay.
I'm helping. Okay, look, I mean, here's the deal. I figure if I'm buying everything from before Watchmen, I'm helping other people who are on the fence about whether or not they should, you know.
I'm surprised you haven't stopped yet as much as you've been talking about Comedian and
but
hating
that's
on it.
It's like, now it's like a point of pride. It's yeah. Like, you know, it's like of defiance. Like, I'm going to see this awful stuff through to the end. This week, it's Dr. Manhattan. Now, I want to preface by saying that I actually like the Adam Hughes art on this. That goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah. I mean, they've even done this interesting thing where the pages are actually colored to be, like, aged, like, darker, you know? Like, they're not just, like, straight white. Like, they have a sort of, like, tint to them, almost. It's kind of interesting. But, and you know, and so the art's great. And that's where it ends, being great. Okay. Dr. Manhattan is, like, one of my favorite characters from Watchmen. The reason I like Dr. Manhattan is because I, myself, am sort of a fatalist, if you will. But I'm what I consider myself to be a scientific fatalist, which is in the sense to say that I think that the events of the universe is all governed by the collision of particles, and that those were all set out during the Big Bang, and everything goes forward in time. The reason I love Dr. Manhattan is because that's exactly what he is. He is the embodiment of that is how the universe works. Because he sees things past, future, as though they exist simultaneously because he exists. For, you know, he exists along all points of his timeline at once. There's a little bit of a quirk to that in Watchmen because of the tachyon radiation. He can't clearly see all the points of his future. But,
booga, 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 science.
Exactly. But...
tachyons and the microwave was left on and
right.
The atomic Superman.
But in essence of how the character is supposed to function, that is how it's supposed to work. This basically says, well, fuck that. We're just going to make him something completely different. And that's, you know, what really bothers there. I mean, one of like my favorite lines and a popular line of Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen is, I'm still a puppet, I'm just a puppet that can see the strings. Which is to say that he can't really change the outcome of any event, because people keep asking him to do that. But he doesn't. Whenever he interferes because he interfered. It's not because someone asked him to interfere, it's because that's what he always did. So, like, when he went to Vietnam and like, fought in Vietnam, he went and fought in Vietnam because that's what he did.
Yeah, he was supposed to be there.
That's what he did. To him, it's like, like when he goes to pick up Lori, and he's like, well, in 15 minutes, we're having a conversation on Mars, so I came to get you. You know, like, that makes perfect sense to him, because nothing is spontaneous.
I love it in Watchmen whenever he would have a conversation with her, and she'd say, like, you're about to tell me that you're sleeping with Dan. And then, like, they don't actually talk about it, and then she says, I'm sleeping with Dan. And he's like, I can't believe you're sleeping with Dan. And he just acts like he doesn't know.
He doesn't interact with it until he has the moment, even though he knows it's coming. It's a very, like I said, it's a complicated kind of thing, but I get it because it's how I think about things. And it's actually not how Alan Moore thinks about things, which is interesting because he was sort of like on the opposite side, but he really crafted the character very well. JMS sort of shits all over that in this as, like, Dr. Manhattan, like, nudges. Well, okay. For one thing, he does this whole thing where he was originally supposed to be teamed with Rorschach, and he changes it so that he's teamed with Silk Spectre. That's not something that Dr. Manhattan can do, nor would he even have considered really doing, because he doesn't consider changing things in terms of his own favor, because that doesn't even happen. I mean, that's not even something that can happen in Dr. Manhattan's world. So, and this whole, the whole idea here is the Schrodinger's cat, you know, that. And this is basically just a bastardization, a complete misunderstanding of what the Schrodinger's cat analogy is, and trying to make it exist in a macro world in which it doesn't. So,
how so?
Well, in terms of Schrodinger's cat, the idea is that certain
Schrodinger's cat.
Right. In subatomic particles, they can exist in both states, and until they're observed, they don't actually exist in reality.
Okay. Right.
But what he's doing here is kind of saying, well, all of those realities exist. It just depends on which one you're in or which one, you know. In this case, it almost becomes like which one Dr. Manhattan decides to make the reality that he's in. Which is just, again, that's not how it functions. And the implication here at the end seems to be leading to this idea that Dr. Manhattan is going to somehow create his own beginning, is almost what I'm guessing. But that... It's just, I mean, I'm going to have to see more of this.
We haven't finished yet, so we don't know exactly.
Right, it's just the first issue, but it's certainly...
It seemed desperately untrue to the character to me. I didn't give it a full reading. I just sort of skimmed it because I wanted to look at the pretty Adam Hughes art. But I thought it was terribly amusing that after our discussion about it, whether it was last week or whatever it was, and we were saying that there's just, we already... know the character's life from start to finish. Where do you even tell a story about it? And the comic's answer was, we'll just add some more to that scene.
Yeah.
It's like in the comic, because the whole thing, and you mentioned the whole issue is continuing Dr. Manhattan's review of his life while he looks over it on Mars.
It feels like Watchmen.
Yeah,
and it's Watchmen. Yeah,
but
exactly.
My problem is it's not add. It's not like adding things into the story that like make sense and fill it out. It's adding things to the story that completely change it. You know, that completely change like the character's perspective, the series of events.
I think it shows that he's a really hard character to write. I think that's
he is, and that, I mean, and I'm not saying that at all. I mean, that's why I say I give big props to Alan Moore for Dr. Manhattan, because unless you really think in that way, and like I said, I don't claim to fully understand it, but it's the way that I think about, you know, the universe and stuff. That unless you think in that way, it's really hard to even grasp it. And even then, I don't know that I fully grasp it. You know, I don't want to say that I have. I feel like I have like an inkling of an understanding. And I can't imagine trying to write it. Like, I wouldn't even want to think about writing it. So, it's basically taken him in a direction in which is not something that would seem to be true to what the character is. But, hey, it's JMS, so, you know, what are you going to do?
But I'm going to keep getting it, because I want to see where...
Flip the table over and walk out 3 issues out of 4 in.
Probably, yeah.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking what I would do if I was JMS.
Right. Yes. So, anyway, there you go, Dr. Manhattan.
Who knows? I'm glad I only picked up 3 issues of this series. And I picked up the 2 good... 2 of them were actually really good.
Yeah. So, there's other good books in this. We'll do... I think when it's all said and done, we'll probably do a full review of the Before Watchmen. Maybe as a special or something.
And we're going to buy, like, 4 copies of Moloch when that comes
in. Yeah. Yeah.
God. I feel like we should all get it just...
We were
precognizant on this one.
Yeah, we called it.
You know what those guys are? Fuck those guys! Give them the more milk. How dare they on their shit little podcast? We will give them all the Moloch they
more
want.
More Moloch for them, bastards.
Moloch, can't have. And then we would explode in 1950s supervillain style.
The back of the trade paperback will say, Fanboy Versus says, what the hell?
If they did that, I would buy a copy.
Oh my god.
Just take quotes out of context. Moloch was ... brackets. The most important supervillain ... and everyone's worst enemy !
Yeah, basically, yes. That's the only way that would work. All right, Chris McFeely. Now, I'm going to make you start out with, because I know you're going to talk about something else, but I'm forcing you to tell me about More Than Meets the Eye and what was wrong. Okay.
Well, it's straightforward enough.
Okay.
In issue 7, Misfire is the character who is looking for the Necrobot. Croc explains to Fulcrum that Misfire believes in the myth of the Necrobot, a mute neutral who roams the galaxy chronicling the deaths of every Transformer. And we see Misfire zooming across the battlefield because he believes he's seen the Necrobot, and that's how they find the big Decepticon spaceship in that issue. Then at the end of this issue, when the Decepticons are gathered around Flywheels' remains, Misfire eulogizes him by mocking Flywheels' search for the Necrobot.
Ooh.
Yeah, the role just got completely flopped. You know, and the spoilers, like, but the issue ends then, a few panels later, 18 months later, with the Necrobot coming and finding Flywheels' remains and adding his name to his list of dead Transformers. And, of course, the scene is supposed to go, oh, look at all these Transformers are going to be dead in 18 months because Ultra Magnus and Drift and Chrome Dome are all on there. But, yeah, you know, it's not... It's like James Roberts has admitted, you know, I was having a discussion, perhaps a slightly heated one, with Lady Rack of the Underbase on Twitter about this. And I was saying, well, that's just a fuck-up. And she was like, no, clearly there's ways to... And I'm like, no, it's a fuck-up. They fucked it up. But James Roberts did actually admit that there was a mistake
We don't know what the mistake was. Because the issue plays, the two-parter, it plays Flywheels as this born-again religious type. So the idea that that character would be a believer in some kind of angel of death fits for that character. And of course, the whole poetic end of the issue is that someone who has long searched for the Necrobot with no success finally meets him when it comes to record his death at the very end. So, you know, those factors would imply... It seems to me that what probably happened was that James Roberts was also writing the annual, for this month as well, though it's out week after next. I don't know if maybe it's just concentration slipped or something, but, like, it's not like the name just accidentally got swapped or something, because the whole end and the fact that Flywheels is the one of them that dies seems... I can't imagine it's an unintentionally poetic.
It's like that event in the previous series should have... It's like the previous episode should have been Flywheels.
Flywheels instead of Misfire, yeah. So it seems like it's like either that should have been Flywheels or Misfire is the one who should have died in this issue.
I didn't even catch that when I was reading it. I didn't even.
Oh no!
Think
I
about
told
that.
Me right.
I didn't either.
I guess I was paying attention to like all the loser Decepticons just saying loser things and just loving the hell out of it.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention. I don't think I paid too much attention to more. I didn't pay enough attention to them until this issue, so I'll have to go back to the previous to get that.
I don't feel like Misfire was written as a character who would have died, whereas Flywheels did have a fairly thin characterization across the two, you know, with just enough characterization to make the death mean something. I'm assuming that means that it was issue 7 that was the one in error, but it seems like the roles of the character who believes and who dies just seems to have suddenly been accidentally swapped between two characters in James Roberts' head between issues, and issue 8 was written with the wrong character in the role, or issue 7 was written with the wrong character in the role or something. So
yeah.
They say it's going to be fixed for the trade. I don't know what that will involve exactly, because it would be a damn shame to lose the poetic ending by changing Misfire's dialogue to not have it be Flywheels who believed in the Necrobot, because you totally lose the poetry of the ending then. But they're not going to go back and redraw the whole scene in the previous issue with Flywheels instead of Misfire, so I don't know what's going to get changed, but they say something's going to be fixed for the trade somehow.
Is it ironic that Flywheels is gotten confused with another character again? I mean, it's bad enough that the poor guy got his name swapped with the other...
Duocon.
So, yeah.
To be fair, I don't know dick about these Decepticons. Honestly, I like them because they're just losers.
Well,
but when I was reading it, I got lost a couple of times. I was like, now which one is that one that just got killed? I don't know.
I mean, I know Flywheels because like I had the figure, and so I'm kind of vaguely familiar with the model. I knew Spinster because of having been familiar with it from BotCon.
I love Spinister. But, I want more Spinister.
Spinister is a weird one, though, because he seems to be deliberately written wrong here. Spinister is not a dumb lug. This is the thing. Spinister is a sinister and mysterious figure. I don't know.
I like him as a dumb lug. I like him as a dumb lug.
Oh, no question, but it's not like there isn't any number of other characters that could have been inserted into that role that you didn't have to reinvent Spinister for. I'm attacking him for it, because I think something has to be going on there.
Yeah.
I want to see more of the Spark Eater pet. He's so cute.
God. But the JDJ in this...
More like...
To just mention, though, the JDJ is fucking horrifying, and I'm just going to say that. God. Like, in a terrifying, like, sick to my stomach sort of way.
I'll say that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I believe the guys over at the Underbase proposed this week Spark Eater versus Bob the Insecticon.
Oh.
And I despise Bob the Insecticon because it's because it's such a massive, retarded, cutesy, wootsy, this is funny, honestly, we swear it's funny, it's a Transformer named Bob, laugh, why aren't you laughing, idea.
How do you not like Bob? Bob is so fun.
Fairly self-explanatory, the previous sentence.
I think you laid that out pretty clear, yeah.
but But Bob versus Spark Eater would redeem Bob, like, completely and entirely in my eyes if they did that. I want to believe that is the only reason the Spark Eater exists.
Well, let's hope so.
Spark Eater is awfully cute. I like him.
All right, Chris. Sorry we've sabotaged some of your time, so very quickly take us through your trade so we can get on to this big issue of Spider-Man if we can.
Book I want to recommend very briefly today, because there's no story as such to talk about in it, is The Comic Book History of Comics by Fred Van Lente and Dunleavy.
I've heard a lot about this, so yes, I'm interested to see.
I read this week. This is exactly what it sounds like. It's a history of comics and comic storytelling from the dawn of the... No, we're not just talking about starting with DC, Superman, and going up. We're talking from the dawn of the century, from pre-Yellow Kid and going forward. And just covering it in comic book format.
Wow.
So it's essentially an heavily illustrated textbook. But it is witty and hugely entertaining, and you would have to be a straight-up professional historian of comics to not learn something from this book. I mean, as I say, it goes right back to the dawn of the use of sequential pictures and words in order to tell stories. It illustrates the Yellow Kid, if you don't know, was considered the very first comic strip, because it was the first use of sequential pictures matched with word balloons in order to tell a progressive story. You know, cartoons before consisted of one panels with, you know, narrative captions on them, or, you know, like single panel things with text underneath. You know, they illustrated it's hard to conceive of a world where that wasn't a method of storytelling, given that we've lived in it for the last 100 years. But they did this very cool thing where this is just in the first couple of pages of the book, where they use who's on first as a way to illustrate the difference between how that is done now, and they just do it in a page. They show you how it works, and then they show you how that joke would have had to have been told in illustrated form before, and it's just one large picture of four baseball players with funny name captions, and there's no joke, because that's just because the medium did not allow for that communication of information and that portrayal of humor. And that's just an example of the sort of analysis and educational. I mean, it goes all the way up through to the present day. You know, it's broken up into chapters dealing with the early years, the involvement of animation and animators in influencing thing. It's not just about following. It's not about ticking off all the important, like when Doctor Strange premiered or when Sandman premiered or anything like that. It's not about just checking off all the boxes you've heard about. It's about following the path of the major companies and industries and key individuals as they shaped and their lives and how they moved through their lives and how they... But Jack Kirby is a central figure in the first half of the book as he moves from company to company. It follows him and other comic creators as they go off to war. And the extent to which these things were influencing popular culture in the burgeoning years, it's really eye-opening, given that we live in a world where they're commonplace now and how certain figures are just... It's unimaginable. You can barely imagine a world without the concept of Superman or whatever in it. And where these things have their origins, it's just it's an educational book. You know, it's a textbook, essentially. But it is recommended reading by me and by anybody. I think anybody that wants to learn a little something about comics, you're going to be surprised by some of the stuff you find in this. And you'll be entertained as well. That's one of the great things about it. You know, I had to set it down quite a few times as I let out serious belly laugh at some of the amusing awesome. Ways they chose That's to cool. illustrate key moments in history. That one that particularly got me was whenever they were talking about the romance comics of the 50s, whenever superheroes had fallen out of favor, they show how large, balding, overweight, cigar-smoking men were typing these replies to these lovely girls' letters of love trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And another great thing about it is how even-handed it is as well. It's not just on the side of comics all the way through, or on the side of creators, or on the side of businesses. Like it, and it doesn't shy away from addressing all the troubles Jack Kirby had with Marvel and DC, and it takes an even examination of internet piracy and everything in the modern day. It
it talks about like the market booms and busts, and you know, it's not afraid to single out Frederick Wortham, but also who wrote Seduction of the Innocent and basically destroyed comics in the '50s, as you probably know. But it's also it doesn't demonize him. It highlights all the great things that he accomplished with his work and his life as well, and just talks about how history is going to sadly forget a lot of that because of what he did. It's an impressively even-handed, entertaining, and informative book that anybody who wants to be able to talk about comics should read. I would recommend it to anybody, and it's published by IDW. And I'm honestly not sure. I don't know if it was published in a separate format before this or not, or if it's an original graphic novel.
I think it's an original graphic.
I think it is. Yeah. It didn't seem to be broken up into equal parts or anything like that. I believe it is. So as I say, it's by Fred Van Lente, who we know from Marvel, from things like Incredible Hercules or Spider-Man or just all sorts of things, really. And with art by Ryan Dunleavy. And go get it.
Sweet.
And broaden your mind a little bit. Comic book history of comics.
All right. Cool. Well, let's use that as a segue then, because we are going to be talking about the Amazing Spider-Man 50-year celebration.
Apparently. Although if you were to hand this comic to somebody, I don't imagine they'd be able to guess that's what the story is in here somewhere.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to make a bigger deal out of 700 than they are out of 50.
Yeah, the way they did roll them together.
I think this is sort of designed to be like that, like this is going to be the event going up to 700, and this is the beginning.
It's like
of
a year long event to celebrate 50 years. That's kind of what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, maybe.
It
yeah,
starts yeah. here. The 50 year anniversary event starts here. That's
but,
what it is.
But the reason I want to segue and we'll start is because this first page is by Van Lint and also Romita Jr., which is it's just the typical first page retelling of. You know, who Peter Parker is and who Amazing Spider-Man is. But, you know, it's kind of cool in a drawn-out way.
Romita Jr. did the art on it, and God, as much as I love the artist they've been using, it makes me want Romita Jr. back on a Spider-Man book. I miss him.
I don't know. Then I turn the page, and I've got Humberto Ramos, and I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'll take more of Roberto Ramos. So there's three stories here. One larger story, which is more, I would say, more in line with where the 700 story is going. There's another short, sort of just fun, cutesy story. And then there's a creator insertion story at the end. So I don't know. That's what I'm calling it. So
you got the lead strip here that's just the next part of Slot Spidey. And it's 25 pages. It's a couple pages longer than normal. Then the backup is like, the next one is like 8 or 10 pages. And then the last strip is just an ordinary 20, 22 page story.
Yeah. So it's a big book. I mean, you know, we talk about it being.
Oh, it's big, and, you know, $6.
It's a big price.
$6, but it's like a 2.5 books, so, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you just can wait to when you pick it up, so.
So let's see. We start out with part one of Point of Origin Alpha. Alpha Part 1, Point of Origin. The first part of this is basically our introduction to this young man, who is not Peter Parker, but is going to be the focus. Andy McGuire is his name, and he is basically a kid that is so ordinary, he is, like, painfully ordinary. Like, no one knows who he is. He doesn't have great grades. He doesn't have, you know, completely failing grades. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't have any friends. His parents are sort of aloof pains in the asses. He is basically a nothing, nobody, nowhere, non-existent, non-disinterested person.
Until one day,
while traveling to Horizon Labs. So, anyway, he's on a school trip, and what do you know, he ends up in Horizon Labs.
Let's not point out that these first two pages are copies of the first two pages of Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
swapped in. That's well cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I mean, like, if you didn't get that while reading this, then shit, just quit reading Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Just stop.
So, Peter Parker, has a giant device thing, which he's using to harness Parker particles to power the world.
Really, Peter.
But it's, I mean, it's one of those things where you do go, really, Peter? But on the other hand, you're like, yeah, Peter would do that.
at least he didn't say Parker Particles 2000, because there he was at 2000.
Yeah, he was at 2000 and stuff for a while. You know, and again, this is, I mean, you know, great slot, you know, leading in straight from where we were. Our Stone here is talking about wanting to take one of the open positions and sabotages Parker, you know, in an attempt to better his own position, which causes the enormous Arachter thing to go basically haywire. And electric bolts go firing all over the place. And as the kid is trying to save one of the hot girls, he gets blasted by the machine.
It's always the hot girls that get saved.
Yeah. Well, it's at least the one that he thought was hot. So I'm, you know, not going to make a judgment call there, but, you know, it was one that he was attracted to. So he gets blasted by the machine and then shows superhuman powers. Now, I love this.
This is in like four pages.
Yeah, this is in like four pages.
This is one of the rare things, but it's just right in there. It's like, you know, as much as they made a thing about like, oh, Spider-Man gets sidekick, oh, news ahead of time, and then it was like, oh, spoilers, and it's like, not really.
Yeah.
It's so matter-of-factly introduced here. I really like it. It's like, you know, there must be accidents like these like once every Thursday in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, yeah. 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 Now, the parents are a little upset, and I love when they do this, like, with characters where it's, like, these parents who, you know, basically pay no attention to their children are suddenly very involved, when something goes wrong. So, basically, they call in the brain trust of the Marvel Universe, Mr. Fantastic, the Beast, Iron Man, and Giant Man, to...
It looks like the Beast must be super... Because he never gets invited to these things.
I know. You know, he's usually left out. I was like, that's awesome.
He sheds. People hate cooking up his hair.
Yeah,
you know?
That's got to be it.
All in between the sensitive instruments.
So there's a great two-page here.
Those smart little hairs that just stick everywhere, you know? And it's just a pain.
But there's a great two-page here where they go through and basically sort of test his powers. And what's interesting, basically the way his powers work is that he can shoot bolts of energy, he can lift heavy things, he can run really fast, he can fly, and he can manifest force fields. But he can only do one of those things at a time.
He's gonna die, isn't he?
He is so gonna die. Because, you know, he can't...
He's gonna put him in a conundrum where he has to do all of these things or he'll die and then he'll just die. That's what's gonna happen.
So, but, you know, otherwise he's stable and fine, but, Reed takes Peter aside and he's like, all right, Peter, we got a little bit of a problem. Well, you know, we've heard of Omega threats. Well, this kid's an Alpha threat, which I guess I'm stupid because I'm not really understanding. I mean, is he saying that he's at the beginning and then he's going to get more powerful?
Yeah, he's like, he's only going to get more
confused.
Powerful.
Because an Omega-level threat is considered an Omega-level threat because it's the worstest threat ever.
Yeah.
And he's trying to make it sound like an Alpha-level threat is worse than an Omega-level threat, and I'm like... Yeah.
Well, he's trying to say that, like, you know, he's at the beginning.
That's kind of what I...
He's at the beginning of getting powers, and he's only going to get more powerful because this as he grows older, he'll get more and more powerful. And if we don't basically put him on the right course now, this guy's going to be the next... Doctor Doom or, you know, Onslaught or, you know,
which,
Galactus or whatever.
Now,
you know,
and here's a moment where I love Dan Slott because, yay, connect things to the larger universe. Because he's like, well, why don't you send him off to Hank with the school, with the kids? And they're like, nah, that's not going to work either.
he closed that during the crossover. They haven't got that open yet. And I heard it's getting canceled in a few months.
It's just not going to... That's not going to work. But hey, I mean, at least it was like a sensible connection to like a larger part of the universe, which I always love to happen. I hate when creators, you know, ignore something that's even within the own pages of their book that would make sense and don't even like make a reference to it. So, you know, yeah, I love Slott. But and the art on here, I think one of my favorite panels here is the Mr. Fantastic on the top of this page where he's like giving Peter like the stern look about, okay, you fucked this up, you got to fix it. And it's just like a great, like, I want a picture of that. Like, I want that to be my desktop. I don't know. Anyway, so Horizon decides that they're going to make this kid their spokesperson and like pay for all this stuff and give him a cushy life. And it'd be more than he would get out of a settlement. So everybody's sort of happy, except for Peter, who's going to have to, like, you know, clean up after the kid and take care of him and stuff. And, you know, Peter even mentions, it's like, okay, you know, kid gets powers, and now I've got a sidekick, and I'm making him a costume. Awesome. This is so familiar. seems like what I used to do. Yeah, and so here comes Alpha. Selling a phone. It's not quite what I expected out of the issue. I don't know.
The A phone, by the way.
The A phone. Get the all new A phone. It's sweet.
Oh my god. Totally.
It's amazing. Look at it. It's so fast. And so Alpha tries to go to school, and, you know, he's basically doing exactly what Peter sort of did and or would have done, at least. And, you know, bullying, you know, trying to pick back on the bullies that had bullied him and, you know, trying to be super popular and stuff. And I love this, the two panel at the bottom here again, where you see Peter, you know, in the spider costume, and then it like zooms in on his face. And it's just the look, you know, and it's, there's so many things going on in that mind.
A certain lesson needs to be.
Yeah, we're going to have a come to Jesus meeting with this kid. So, anyway, hey, remember Aunt May?
Hey, she's still alive.
She's still alive and still living in Boston.
Yeah, moved to Boston somehow.
So I have a nice dinner with MJ and just talking about things and quick conversation with, I can't remember his name.
Jameson's
dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
But about how, you know, hey, you know, the world almost ended and you didn't even call your aunt. He's like, well, I was busy trying to save it.
I love so, how they leave and they're like, are they back together again?
I have no idea.
I was like, why is MJ there at this dinner? What's going on?
Yeah. You know, Peter doesn't have a lot of friends anymore, and, you know, MJ's friends with them, so it all makes sense. But, yeah. So Alpha's getting the girl.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, eventually Peter decides he's going to, you know, lay down the law with the kid. You follow my rules. And if you don't, you're out. And so he takes him out on the town and basically trains him on, you know, how hard to punch people depending on whether they're powered or not, and, you know, what's the right thing to do, and all this kind of stuff. So Peter gets a call from the Fantastic Four because they need help with something, and he tells the kid to stay. Well, what happens when you tell a kid to stay?
He goes.
They never stay.
They don't stay.
So there's some, whatever the monster thing is, the Giganto.
Yeah, Peter has to go and fight the cover of Fantastic Four number one.
Yeah, basically. That's exactly what I was thinking. Well, you know, the kid kind of breaks a couple of superhero rules, which is, you know, you don't interject yourself into another superhero fight unless you're asked. And you certainly do not steal their catchphrase. Because he basically comes flying in out of nowhere, switches his power to strength as he's flying, punches the thing and knocks it out. But he does so while yelling, it's clobbering time.
Yeah, let's just say Ben not happy.
Yeah, he's like, I've got that trademarked.
I got rights.
And he's also shown up.
He's like, you don't see me, say.
God, whatever else he goes
with. I say Fiend Smash or Flame On.
God. Of which the part with Reed is the better part, because he's like, wait a minute, you told him he's an alpha level threat? You told him all this stuff? Are you crazy? It's like, well, I can't. Yeah, okay, I messed up. But who else? Who else would?
There, Spidey.
Yeah, good job. But who else would be happening to pay attention to what's going on with Peter? Ah, yes. None other than the Jackal.
What?
Dun, dun, dun.
And he's got a bunch of female servants, which I could assume are, like, queen clones, maybe?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I just if you know the Jackal, this can only mean one thing. And it's like my brain goes,
clones? There's going to be clones? Got to get me some of that. So, yeah.
You got to get some of what, Jackal clone?
Yeah. I don't know. So that's it for that story. Our next story is called Spider-Man for a Night. This is Daniel Haspel?
Dean Haspel.
Yeah, Dean Haspel, Haspel. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was partly obstructed by my microphone. And Guilla Briscoe? Colors? I don't know. Anyway, story and art. Anyway, Dean Haspel does. So,
Dean Haspel writes and draws. You're right.
Yeah. So this is kind of a, kind of a cutesy almost backup story where it basically goes
it's like
from...
right after Amazing Spidey number 50, you know, that landmark issue where Spider-Man's like, Spider-Man, no more.
Spider-Man, well, no more.
What happened to that costume?
For a night. So, some guy who seemed to be trying to rob some places or something, grabs a suit and puts it on, gets accosted by a police officer, you know, loses the money that he took, and gets smacked around. So takes his gun and tries to hold up a place. That goes horribly wrong as he gets hit in the head with a golf club and nearly shot. thankfully, it doesn't look like the gun had any bullets in it, I guess. But it turns out
kind of like he didn't really want to hurt anybody, especially when you get to the end of the story. See what he was doing.
So he seems to come home, and you find that it's his granddaughter, I guess, sick, and she may be actually dying, and she's a huge Spider-Man fan. And so he comes in, you know, saying that he was sent by her grandfather and talks to her and stuff, and then he just, leaves the costume, basically saying that he doesn't have what it takes to be a superhero, but, you know. He sort of did it for a little bit, so. Anyway,
he says it takes more to be a superhero than just dressing like one.
Yeah.
Is what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's
a cute little story. I mean,
yeah.
It's what it is. Cute.
Yeah.
It's cute. Yeah, I like.
And it's like in a larger collection of more stories, I would see its place.
Yeah, it seemed like it. I don't know. I mean,
let's just sum up this next story, and then we'll talk more about the whole package.
Okay, so the last story here.
Last story, by the way. There, I thought it was fun.
The last story here. Peter wakes up late and slept in too late because he's got a speaking engagement. I guess it is college. Is that what he says? I think somewhere. Anyway, he's got a speaking. He's got a speaking engagement somewhere, and he runs...
Yes, his alma mater.
His alma mater. So he's running late, as he sleeps in too late, I guess.
And before I forget about it, JD, I think they wrote this one specifically for you, just because it's Scarlet Spider, and he's wearing his old costume.
Yeah.
I was looking at that, too.
I was like, that's awesome.
I wonder how JD's like it.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, that's funny. Yay. So anyway, so Peter's desperately trying to run to find a ride and can't get one at all. Can't get a bus, can't get a cab, can't get even steal a kid's bike. So
why was he looking for one in the first place?
Change your clothes time and swing through the streets. Gets recognized as Scarlet Spider for some reason.
That's the other kid that reads the comic, by the way.
Yeah, that's the other kid. Thank you. Yes. But of course, along the way, he hears someone having trouble, so he sees this big dude attacking this girl. And so he kicks the big dude down, and turns out that the girl is not a girl, but a guy, and the big guy is not a guy, but a woman.
His wife.
And, you know, so he's talking about, you know, well, domestic abuse can be serious in any sense, and she punches him in the face.
Yeah.
So he's running late, tries to call to say that he's going to be late and he's going to be there. And in the meantime, he sees smoke, and so he has to leave the call behind and almost leaves all of his stuff, but takes that with him. Goes to the scene of the fire, and the firemen try to tell him not to go in, but he goes in anyway to try to save the people that turn out to be mannequins. Because it wasn't a real fire. It was actually a training exercise in a condemned building. So he gets soaked and catches on fire. I don't know how that happens, but whatever. Gets put out by someone who may be related to Wilson Fisk, or the Juggernaut, or the Rhino, who in the process crushes and destroys his phone.
Yeah.
So he wrings out his clothes and gets shit on by a pigeon.
Yeah,
which he flips off.
Where it's like, curse you, bird! I'll catch you and I'll poop on you.
As he's flipping the bird off, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And who would catch all of this?
Bad day continues.
Yeah, so who would catch all of this on film but Ben Grimm?
Love it.
And so Peter steals the camera and breaks it. But Ben still has it on his phone. So.
Yeah.
So, and sends the picture to, like, his entire address book.
I love it.
All right. So then Peter's trying, basically gets to the point where he's like, screw this, I'm just going home. But no, there's a kid getting beat up, or at least harassed by some other kids. And so he saves the kid from the bullies and leaves the other one, of which there's a great moment here where he's like, just don't look back. He's got the kid like stuck to the wall, maybe by his hand. He's like, just don't look back. It's more dramatic that way.
It's cooler to just walk away.
Yeah. Okay. So he starts talking to the kid, and it turns out the kid is like, you know, sort of a loser and tries to say that he's cool because his mom and dad are Hulk and She-Hulk, and that when he turns 16, he's going to become a superhero, and of which Peter's like, look, Hulk and She-Hulk, cousins? Weird. No. that would just be strange, and goes through, basically tells the kids, like, look, you just can't lie to people. You just got to be cool like you are. You're cool. But hey, let's go swing through the city anyway. And so they go.
How cool would this be?
That's why I said this is what I'm calling the creator insertion story, because it's like, this is sort of like, I think, this seems more like a fan insertion story than anything, because especially after this two-page.
I love it when he says, and while I'm at it, you probably shouldn't wander off with strangers, even if they're dressed up like Spider-Man.
Which, I'm wondering about, now, I will say that this two-page makes me wonder, because Steve Rogers is in his Steve Rogers gear, not his Captain America gear. Seems a little odd. Anyway.
It is odd, but you do have him running the spider buggy. The spider buggy is kind of awesome.
He's running the spider buggy. He gets to meet She-Hulk and Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
And they go jumping on a trampoline.
Punch out a burglar.
They take pictures. They have hot dogs and stuff. So, you know, gets to have a fun day. And then they end it by going for ice cream. But Peter doesn't have any money, so he's going to make the kid buy him ice cream. So, yeah.
He doesn't know where he put his wallet.
Yeah. So there you go. And that's it. There's your three stories for the 50 years of, you know, and it, I mean, I get what you're saying in terms of, like, you think about the difference, like, when you got to that, like.
What we've got here is the next part of Downslot Spider-Man, which is the first part of a pretty big story that's obviously going to lead up to 700. Right. It's as good as any slot story ever is. It's the best part of the book, totally. Then we get a short story that's set at a pivotal moment in Spider-Man history, which is the sort of story you would expect in a book that's supposed to be celebrating 50 years of Spider-Man. And then you have what feels like nothing other than an inventory story by some random creators dropped in to fill up the page numbers. It's a perfectly fine story. It's a funny little story. It's a cute little story. But it's just a really random Spider-Man, a random inconsequential Spider-Man story that has not a pivotal representation of any parts of his history. It doesn't explore. It's a real page filler. It's a fine story, but I'm just really pulled out of the fact.
It's kind of like representing like the humor, you know, the Spider-Man as just kind of a funny, kooky character is what I felt when I was reading it. And I was fine with it.
I mean,
but I get what you're saying. It needs to be something else, but you know, as a backup.
I get the feeling that like all of their work has been building up to the 700 issue, and it's like somebody somewhere said, "Look, you've got to do something for the 50-year issue, regardless of whether or not it's the 700." And it's like, this is what we got. So it's like, you know.
I mean, it doesn't even feel like somebody wrote for this. I mean, I'm not saying it definitively is or anything, but it really feels like something that might have been written for just a random Spider-Man. Maybe this is something held over from Web of Spider-Man from a while back that didn't get published or something like that.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's just so random.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't. I mean, it's fine and all and worth the money, at least. I mean,
oh, totally,
you know.
No. I mean, it's a perfectly fine story. I'm not knocking the story.
No, it's just not... It doesn't have that 50th year feel to it, you know?
There's no reason for it to be in here.
Where's my one space...
I know what your problem is. Uncle Ben didn't show up. Like, his ghost or, like, dream?
No, I mean, like, where's... No, the 50 year...
He shows up on the moon or something. Sometimes that happens.
No, like, well, that's I'm more saying, like...
Spider-Man is about, next week's Avenging Spider-Man is about Aunt May and Uncle Ben. He's teaming up with Aunt May for next week's Avenging Spider-Man. Which is part of the anniversary celebration.
I mean, my thing is, like, where's my one-page, like, Stan Lee story? Where's my one-page... You know, like, taking some of, like, maybe some of the creators, you know, the major big creators from the last 50 years and giving them like a 2-page deal or something, you know.
It's just like 3 stories ain't gonna cut it.
You're not gonna get that in 700.
When one of them is this. Yeah, it's great that I'll get it in 700. It probably will, but it's like this is the one that's being actively touted as the 50th anniversary celebration of Spider-Man.
And
it's the one that should have the things that celebrate elements of Spider-Man's history.
Well,
and
the
it
thing
has
is...
one story that does that, and then a filler, fluff filler.
But this is what I've picked up on that last. I feel like this was just for you. You're supposed to be that kid. You're supposed to be that kid that I want to go out on a date with Spider-Man. And that's how I came out feeling. I'm like, oh, this would be so fun if I was this kid, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
That's just the story working on its own terms, but it doesn't justify its presence here anymore.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But one thing we are skipping out are those awesome Marcus Martin covers to the different decades. Those things are fantastic.
Yes.
I would own a poster of any of those things. They're beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are cool. So, no, I mean, it's a good issue. It's a good story. You know, definitely want to pick it up. But it just seems, I think the only kind of baffling thing is it seems odd as a 50th.
And it's down to that third story. It's not a knock on the story. It's just it and it alone totally throws off the balance and focus of this issue. Its presence unbalances the comic as a 50th anniversary celebration or a celebration of Spider-Man history by being... it's 22 pages long. I mean, you don't just randomly ascribe backup strips in comics to be 22 pages long. It smacks of an inventory story that was done a while back that has been put into fill-up page stories. I'm not saying it definitively is. I'm not trying to demean the creator's work when I say that, but it's the first place my mind went.
You know, it almost... I wonder if it even wasn't done back during, I don't know, Spider Island or something. You know, because like I said, even the art
it's
got to
be older, because of the Cap.
Because the Cap issue thing again, you know,
it's
seems really odd. That seems really stick out to me. I don't know why, but anyway, it's not that huge of an issue. So there you go, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, 50.
You get what you pay for, but it's a bit of an odd mixture of stories. But the slot main strip is as strong as it ever is.
Oh yeah, it's good stuff.
And people are all up on the internet about the Spider-Man's getting a signing, worst idea, and etc. All the usual noises, and I'm like, you just have to read this to understand why it's not Spider-Man gets a sidekick. That's not the story.
He's not He's not like a Bucky or a Robin or something like that.
And they were all wrong anyway, because he's not Spider-Man's sidekick. Spider-Man is his sidekick, remember? That's what the guy
said. Yeah, that's true.
Good point. So, all right.
Another story of Spider-Man cleaning up his own mess.
Yep.
And living to the responsibility, to his responsibilities. Spidey always finds it a way to make it about him.
He's like that. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
He's just like
the looter.
All right. So there you go. Fanboy Versus 115 episodes done as of this one.
Whenever we reach our 50th anniversary, we just have to have a completely random talk about nothing.
I'm
going
to be dead by the time we get to our 50th anniversary. That's not even. Yeah. I won't even be here. Like. We'll be lucky if we make it to our third. I mean, let's be...
Come on! Our third's just around the corner. Come
on! Is it third? Is it really third? Wow. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, fifth.
God, yeah, that's not far away, is it?
God, wow.
It's January. Like,
wow. All right, never mind.
That's
fifth.
6 months away.
Fifth, then. I don't know. God. Let's hope we're not doing this into, like, our 70s.
See, what we do is we just... What we do is we stop the show, and then we come back 10 years later like Brian with RFC, and then we just say, oh yeah, it's the 10th anniversary.
Oh wow. God, can you imagine us doing this show in our 70s and be like, hold on, I gotta poop, I'll be back.
I remember when these things was printed on paper. It's like, no, just have the damn things beamed directly into your brain. Now I remember when these were digital and you used to be able to hold the iPad in your hand.
Yeah, those were the days.
I remember when they were digital and now my holodeck doesn't work. Damn it.
Oh, there you go. Visions of the future.
I remember having to interact with people to purchase these.
Yes. Thankfully, I don't have to do that anymore. Especially after the radiation storms.
Intelligent apes. I hate those intelligent apes. They shortchange me every time.
God. That was before the Dothraki attacked. And God.
I can't seem to interface with the world mind.
God. All right. Well, there you go. Fanboy Versus.
Versus all those young people today with their pierced ears. And
get off of my lawn!
Get off of my space lawn.
I can't wait to be able to say that.
God.
Get off my moon rocks, damn it.
Where's my hoverboard? Where's my hoverboard? All right. So go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Check us out on Twitter, at fanboyvs. It's a good time. So you check us out there. Check out our tweets. Who knows? You may get more retweets of Rob Liefeld. Probably not. But but that is the thing that's still going on.
I was just reading his exchange with Scott Snyder, which I hadn't seen before.
Oh, really? You hadn't?
No, I hadn't seen that bit before. No, it's like, good Jesus, Rob.
Yeah. No, I love the point where he's like, all right, we're taking this public because it's not enough fun to ridicule you.
Side, Rob, really? What?
One-on-one. And the whole lead, the senior Batman writer thing, like, it's like, yeah, Scott Snyder, senior Batman writer. That's what the person that writes Batman is called. It's just a thing.
Nobody is disputing it.
Right.
Nobody's reading it because of him, though. It's not selling because it's good. It's selling because it's Batman.
Right, it's selling because it's Batman. Yeah, okay.
How is Batman the Dark Knight selling, by the way?
I love that.
I haven't bought any of it. I'm just saying.
I love that he tries to point out. He was like, "Well, see, you're not very good because look, Swamp Thing isn't good. Like, really?
Swamp Thing is good. I don't know if it's selling.
I mean, I don't know if it's selling or not, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, I'm just gonna look it up. Though there was a fantastic snap back from Snyder. There, hang on, let me just look it up.
And can I say we've had an amazing chat this week, you guys, Rob?
I'm sorry I haven't followed along, but I'm...
The 1 week I can't look at the friggin' chat?
I know that Timey was supposed to be in there, and I know that...
They're talking about me, aren't they?
They're talking about
me!
Okay, they're talking about...
Everybody in the chat, go and talk about me, please. You can't see you.
They're talking about Batgirl and Ambush Bug and Jesus. What else are they? I haven't been paying attention. My God.
Wow.
They were talking about all these They were talking about all the craziness that, on TMNT. They're talking about, you know, canceling comic books and stuff.
Wow.
So, yes, go chat, go. Talk about McFeely. He can't see you. He can't see you.
Here's the burn that I find from Scott Snyder says, nice, your Twitter feed's the best thing you've written all year.
That was great. Yes.
Oh, ouch.
Yes. No, it's not done yet. Rob Liefeld snaps back. Of course, because it's not edited. And then Scott Snyder is going, you know, I'll give you credit, Rob. Batman might sell in spite of me and Greg Capullo, but Deathstroke and Hawkman did fail because of you. Credit where it's due.
Oh!
Ice burn! He is going to get his hand smacked behind the scenes for that one.
Yeah. Well, and Scott even came out like after that and like apologized and was like, look, I shouldn't have gotten even caught up in all that nonsense. And so, I mean, Scott's already apologized for his part in it, so. But, you know.
So McFeely, do you want to know who thinks you've got sexy eyes, or you just want it to remain?
Oh, God.
Someone says that McFeely's right leg is the best right leg ever.
Yeah. All right.
My right leg is so good, I'm going to a physical therapist about it on Tuesday. That's
yeah.
Alright,
well, on that note, I think we'll get out of here. So, thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.